Welcome. It is the Ski Bum Podcast, episode number 324, and it is your pals, Mario and Brian. Mario, what's up?
We're here on a Saturday. It's going pretty good. Got a lot of plans for coming up.
Yes, it's an unusual Saturday afternoon podcast recording. We tried doing it last night, but I will tell you, it was a long week. It was a rough week. I hit the wall bad, and I threw the white flag up to Mario. I was like, dude, can we just push this out? Because I am dying. I'm dying right now.
And I was waiting for the white flag because I was like, yeah, I was pretty spent, burnt.
It would not have been a podcast wrap worthy of our special guest. We had a wonderful conversation with Mr. David Abramowitz, who is the founder and CEO of Cool Kia, who, if you don't know, they are a ski, snowboard, travel, luggage manufacturer company. And if you haven't seen their stuff, you got to check it out. Their stuff is really high end, really high quality.
They got some nice bags. Yeah.
Yeah. Their stuff is extremely well designed and well manufactured. And we'll talk way more about it in the main topic. So please check that out. We think you'll love it. Kind of got David's origin story too, how we started the company and what his vision was. And we saw their products up at Snowbound, and we've got a couple things, both Mario and I. And seeing it in person and touching it and playing with it, and you can tell it's a high quality product. And it was great talking to him. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. Check us out, skibumpodcast.com. We're on the socials, X, Instagram, Facebook, Untapped at skibumpodcast. Do you want to help us out? Do you want to be part of the crew? We would love that. Patreon.com/skibumpodcast. Updating all of the different tiers. We got four tiers now, the $100 a month if you want to be a producer, $20 a month, $10 and $5. You get some rewards. You get some good stuff. We got some perks in there, so please check that out. If you want to be a Patreon, we'd love that. Patreon.com/skibumpodcast.
Totally worth it.
Send us an email. You got things to say? You want to share some love, some knowledge, some inspiration, some complaints, whatever, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. Big shout out and thank you to 10,000. So I'm still working with 10,000. They are a wonderful athletic training clothing company. Their motto is better than yesterday. And what's cool about their stuff is they are all about making products that are high quality and helps you get to where you want to go. Especially now, ski season is kind of getting underway for most folks. You want to get yourself in shape, stay in shape, so you have a better, longer ski season. Check out 10,000. The heart of 10,000 is the idea of pursuit in business, fitness, life, and skiing. And they believe in moving forward with a quiet dedication to constant improvement and to becoming just a little bit better than they were yesterday. So if you go to their website, 10,000.cc, use the code BSCHNEIDER15, BSCHNEIDER15, you can get 15% off. They have some other cool holiday season stuff going on too. So check it out. Interval shorts, session pants, all awesome stuff. That's what I'm wearing right now. Super cozy, super comfortable. Help you do your thing. Thank you to them. Thank you to all of you. Mario, let's kick this off the way we always do.
It's time for Au Pray Today.
All right, so my Au Pray Today, because I do have to go do a lot of driving after this, is non-alcoholic. So
the Saturday I'm after an Au Pray Today. I mean, you really, it's a fork in the road if you start hitting it hard at 2 o'clock on a Saturday.
But I am in Florida. Like, it's one of those things that it's the weekend and usually there's day drinking going on Saturday and Sunday. So
usually on the water, it's a rarity. Boat, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Even not just hanging out. There's a lot of college football on right now. There would be a lot of wings and beer going on right now.
Well, speaking of college football, do you see the whole thing with Oklahoma State and Texas?
Yeah, that's going on now.
We're playing, but there was a fraternity at Oklahoma State. They found a dead Texas Longhorn, like not a player, an actual animal, like a giant. That's
messed
steer.
Up, man.
How messed up is that?
That is messed up. That's messed
but
up.
They say, don't mess with Texas, because let's be honest, Oklahoma is pretty much like North Texas.
Yeah, that's true. They're very close, right?
They're hardcore. So they're playing right now. So yeah. When you listen to this, the game's already over. Whoever, congratulations to the winner, Cowboys, Longhorns. somebody.
Yeah, it might be close. We'll see. By the time you hear this, it's over. That's for sure.
It's over.
No, so I got a nice raspberry bubbly. Now, this is nice because what I usually do with this is throw a little bit of weed drops in there and swill it down, and I get a nice, refreshing, sparkling water that tastes like a little bit of raspberry, no calories, and a little bit of weed. Like, it's good, sets you on a nice, even path. Like, it's all good.
Bubbly and mellow.
Yeah, so this is a good choice. Sometimes I'll throw a little fruit juice in with this, you know, maybe a little cranberry juice to add a little bit of ras cranberry or
razzle dazzle.
But yeah, just kind of like the carbonation, and it's pretty good. I had a little stromboli with it earlier. Okay, yeah. So, oh yeah, I like my stromboli over calzone, because the calzone has a ricotta cheese. Like, I like the stromboli, just the purest, just the meat and the cheese wrapped up in a nice little blanket.
Stromboli is pretty much like pizza just rolled up into an easy-to-go vessel, right?
Giant pizza roll. Yeah, just boom, bang it down. But yeah, so that's what I'm doing. I did have a little Di Serrano cream thing with my coffee this morning. So I did have a little bit.
This could be
a day drinking.
Our, like, running meme or gag or something. Like, whenever you see, like, Di Serrano, like, you got to, like, have a – you think about us, because – it's like our thing now. Like, maybe we can get Di Serrano to sponsor us. How cool would that be?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
You send us some cases of that velvet cream.
Yeah. So I went to dinner with some vendors from Chicago this week, and we're there at dinner, and they're like, "Oh, have you ever been to Chicago?" I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I was there once." And
I've had Malort.
And I said, I was like, "Yeah, the misfortune of trying was Malort." And all their faces were like, "Oh, you had Malort?" Like, they're like, "We hate that stuff, but everybody drinks it."
Nobody
likes
it.
They had stories. Well, they had stories about, like, the one person they know that's like, "Oh, yeah, they have Malort every once in a while. They like it." Like, I don't know anybody that likes it. It's like a rubber tire.
Because these pants aren't going to shit themselves. Malort.
But it was kind of funny. I brought it up with the Chicago group, and they're like, "Oh, my God, nobody knows about Malort." They were even trying to forget about it.
I was pretty, like, epic icebreaker, right?
Yeah, that really got, you know, me on everybody's side. They're like, "Oh my God, you're like one of us now. Like, you've had Malort." Yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, but you got to have a beer with the chaser, right?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, everybody has it. The Malort with the beer." I'm like, "It's just a dumb combination because it's horrible."
Isn't that funny when they've said, like, "Oh, this is how you have to have it." It's like, no, this the reason you have to have that way is because it's disgusting in the first place. You could just ignore the first part and just go right to the beer and be happy.
You could just not put that disgusting stuff in your body. How about that? Like, that is an option. Just saying, you know,
it's like the South Park bicycle, right?
Yeah. Special bike. Why would you want it different? Like, that's how everybody gets it. But can I just get it normal? Well, you can.
Yes.
Let me do that.
All right, Mr. Rule Breaker. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Well, did you bring up the idea of the cream Malort?
Oh, you know, I was holding that because I know they would have taken it and run with it.
That's true. You don't want to give those away. That could be cream our ticket to fame and fortune is the cream Malort.
Oh, dude, you have Malort cake instead of a
rum cake?
Instead of, like, a rum cake, you have a Malort cake. Think of that.
That seems like a Gillian Keeves, like, SNL kind of thing. It's like, "Hey, we've got this delicious sponge cake. Let's just pour Malort all over it and, like, serve it at a party." You serve it at the party and everyone's like, "Oh, this cake is awful." And they just start fighting, just beating everybody up.
It's okay. Yeah, it's like Malort, like, it sets itself on fire. Like, it's great. You didn't have to set it on fire for a flare. It does itself.
I mean, I can't really think of a time when I've had a piece of cake and go, "You know what? I wish this tasted more like flaming rubber." That would really enhance my enjoyment of the flavors of this cake. But who am I? I didn't go to culinary school, so perhaps I'm missing something.
And again, these pants aren't going to shit themselves.
Amen to that. Well, speaking of pants shitting themselves, not really. But last night, so I was so tired. Like I said, texted Mario. I'm like, "Bro, we can't do it tonight. Do it tomorrow." I actually have two apres right now. Neither of them are exciting. Nice. I assure you. So I have coffee, which I've been just, like, wolfing down all morning from the second I get up. The
beautiful Skiba Podcast Yeti cup.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sale still.
No, it's not. They're all sold out.
Oh,
this is the highfalutin special order, maybe. These are done. They don't make this color anymore, Yeti. This, if you have it, you have it. If you don't, I'm sorry. I can't help you.
I can't help you.
That said, so last night, before we even were thinking, when the podcast was still a glimmer in both of our eyes around like 6 o'clock last night, I made myself some tea because my wife and I were in the final stages of recovering from this ridiculous cold we've had the whole month of November.
Oh, yeah.
I made a delicious traditional medicinals, which is my go-to tea, honey and lemon. I had two sips and then it just sat there all night because I couldn't even drink it. I just had to go to bed because I was so tired. So I got the new Ski Bum podcast and the old highfalutin Ski Bums one. So I got dual Yetis going on. Freaking you out, man? Is this freaking you out? Too freaky deaky. Yes. Two Yetis. I usually have like seven on the counter at all times. I got a water bottle too. Like I got all kinds of stuff going on right now.
Damn,
all kinds of Yeti stuff. That's how we do it over here. But caffeinated, we're excited. We're gonna bang out this podcast. We got this great interview. So I say we just stop yammering and
let's go to ski news.
First up, our girl Michaela Schifrin wins World Cup slalom in Killington for a record-extending 90th career victory. I don't know if you watched it. I watched it. I didn't watch the giant slalom on Saturday. Saturday was just... it's like a broken record. It was insanity. My wife was still really sick, had the kids, were running all over the place. Forgot to record it. It was like 3:30. And they put it on at 3. I'm like, oh, forgot to record it. But I made sure, recorded, and we watched on Sunday.
They jumped to YouTube. It's usually out there right after it.
Yeah, but you know, you kind of like, when you're in the moment, you want to watch it.
You want to watch it live. Yeah. Fresh. Yeah.
It did do it. I think it was live. The second run of the two. But I missed it. So Michaela came in third in that one, in the giant slalom. But then Sunday, made sure we watched it. She pulled it off. She dominated slalom Sunday, pleasing the home crowd, posting the fastest time in both runs on Superstar, beating Slovakian rival Petra Vlhova by 0.33 seconds. It's amazing to do this, especially here with the home crowd, said Schifrin, who is from Colorado, but can almost consider Killington a hometown race because she honed her skills nearby at Burke Mountain Academy as a teenager. It's such a good vibe here, and there's a little extra intensity because we want this to be good for you guys to watch. I hope it was a good show. Of course, crowd was crazy when she says stuff like that. Vlhova put in a really good second run, but you know, Michaela found a way. She put it down. It's so cool watching too. For those of you who don't really watch ski racing too much, it is so much fun to watch a race like that, especially because we know that mountain so well. Like we know Superstar so well, and you watch them, and it's just cool seeing how different everyone's technique is. Because you watch some of these, I mean, in this race, some of the women, they just, from the top, they were just going like, you're like, that's whoa, it. like she is flying.
Flying.
They have a style. It's almost when you watch track and you see people who are sprinters and they're just so fast out the gate. And in the 100, they're awesome. But then you put them in a 400, they bust out super fast and then they just lose it towards the end. And you saw a lot of that in this race. Like you see a bunch of women.
Ski racing too. Yeah, they do. If they're using, you know, they're losing fractions of seconds every turn. You go 3-4 turns in, it's like, wow, they really slowed down. Like, and they do so many time checks now. They're like, oh, so-and-so is falling off the pace. And it's kind of cool because the announcers know that while you're watching. Like, oh, crap, are they going to, you know, get their technique back or what's going on? Like, it's just really, it's so intense because it's, everything is fractions of a second, you know?
Yeah. And I think they had five different splits they were showing in terms of the times, but you know, obviously the top is where the steepest part was. And again, some of these women just, they came out ripping. And then it's almost as if they were, and I said to my wife when we were watching, I'm like, wow, she skis really violently. Like she was making really hard, really good turns. But then by the middle and the end, there just isn't that ferocity anymore because that really wipes you out. And I think that's one of Michaela's biggest strengths is that she never looks like she doesn't ski that violent way. Everything is smooth, and it's smooth from top to bottom. And
it's efficient. Like, it's efficient.
Bingo.
The transfer of everything and managing the energy. Like, it's kind of amazing to watch.
And that, that definitely crosses over to other sports as well. And that's when you look at what separates the professional from the very best is there is that ability to almost hold back when you need to, so that when you really need to put forth a little bit of extra, you do have that in the tank versus always going all out and just maybe using up your energy ahead of time. I mean, you see it obviously in like boxing, UFC, like there's a lot of that where you UFC need to have something left in the tank. You got to keep something in the tank. Some of these guys, if you can survive the first round, not get knocked out, you've got the win because you're able to, you have that long-term kind of endurance to fight. But
well, UFC, you see it with the grappling. The guys are grappling or the girls are grappling, and you just see the energy draining from them as they are expending all this energy. And it's like, somebody's going to gas out, you know?
Oh yeah. It's almost like a parasite, like sucking their energy when they do that. You know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting to watch. That's for sure. But 90th victory. I think she's doing great this weekend too.
Freaking amazing.
I mean, 90 career World Cup victories, and she's 27.
And I gotta say, she is still not getting the props in the U.S. I think for being probably one of the best athletes ever in the world. Like, in any sport, like in women's sport, she's amazing.
You know, though, she is a little. I don't know if awkward is the word. A little reserved, even when you see her being interviewed.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's her being uncomfortable or I don't know. There just seems to be an authenticity to her. A lot of these people you see who are like quick to like BS and like, oh, those boxers are amazing and blah, blah, blah. Like, she just seems very like, yeah, I wasn't feeling right. Things were a little tough.
Don King representing her.
I don't know. I just feel like there's almost like she's almost too honest in some dude, ways.
If she had Don King representing her, they would do a ski off. Two racers for like $1 billion, just one race.
Lindsey Vaughn, Michaela Schifrin, to the death. Ski let to the death.
Let one run. Shit talking. That's right. And then after that, it'd be like Ted Ligety against Michaela Schifrin, like just somebody, just throwing people together.
Wouldn't that be kind of funny or kind of awesome if like Red Bull just came out with something like that and they're like have like a, like bracketed ski racing, like one on one.
Be like the live of skiing.
No, think about that. What if they did, you know how they have like the ski cross where it's, four or five, I think is it four, five,
I think
six?
It's four.
I think it's four skiers or boarders going at the same time. Imagine they had a downhill or a giant slalom where it's one-on-one.
Yeah.
So kind of like crashed ice, I guess, a bit, but not.
Or just next to each other, because they usually do two slalom courses next, have like four cross, and they're all going at the same time.
Yeah, but at some point they got to cross each other. So it's two sets of flags, and then maybe, I don't know, two or three times during the race, they got to cross each other.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool? Have it like bracketed. So you have like 16 skiers, have them like, face each other in races, and you kind of bracket it through, and then you have the champion.
Yeah.
This is
downhill.
We're giving this away.
But downhill, two people start at the same time.
That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Edging each other out, going 80 miles an hour. I don't know if the professionals would actually do that. I'd watch it, but.
Who needs professionals? Just grab the second tier people. This would be amazing to watch.
I think it would have to be just like the team MMA. We have
the dumbest.
It's got to be in Russia because it's illegal. You have the sexy dance, the event, and then the post-game interview. That's really all it.
I think the bracketed ski racing, I think we could be onto something there.
How about two mountains that come together?
Whistler Blackcomb.
Boom. And then you meet in the middle and that settles it out. You have the same finish line from either side.
You got to go across the peak to peak.
Oh, that's totally bam. Like who's going to flinch? It's a game of chicken at the end.
That's right. It's like, well, they held the first bracketed ski race tournament and we lost 7 participants. So we're pretty sure it's the last one.
And that'll be the last one. And we're coming live from Kazakhstan where it's legal here. Never to be done again. Yeah. It's going to be.
Hey, we tried,
like
we tried, right? you know, we're pushing the sport.
It's exciting.
Forward.
Yeah. You got to do something to push it forward.
Speaking of pushing it forward and excitement.
So there is an atmospheric river forecast to blast the Pacific Northwest with heavy rain and feet of snow, not inches, but feet with the capital F.
It sounds like a Steve Miller song, like Atmospheric River.
Yeah, it does, right?
Some like 70s, like classic rock song.
So they're predicting, this is coming from, well, this is in USA Today, but I'm sure it came from AccuWeather. And NOAA, of course, put that in there. So several storms will blast the Northwest over the next few days. And this was put out the 30th. So it should be happening kind of now in the next few days.
There's some blasting going on.
Yeah. So they say multiple atmospheric rivers are forecast to dump heavy rain and feet of snow across the region. Series of storm will come ashore in the Northwest late this week. Additional storms will carry on even into next week. This is coming in for a little bit. It's not like a one and done big storm. It's multiple storms coming in. They're just going to roll in and start just dumping.
Atmospheric river.
Atmospheric river. It's pretty cool when they show it shot from space, which is pretty amazing. We get shots from space now, and they actually show it. It does look like a river just flowing through. It's pretty neat.
So cool. Yeah.
So they're saying it's going to make travel difficult due to hazardous heavy snow and blowing snow. And they actually do a good job here of explaining what an atmospheric river is. And they're saying it's a phenomenon where flow of moisture from the Pacific Ocean resembles a fire hose that delivers near constant rain and higher elevation snow to the Western United States or British Columbia. So it just kind of flows right in like a fire hose. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I wonder too, when did they name this stuff? Because I feel like in the last decade, we have so many more names for winter storm phenomena than we ever did. Like bomb
cyclone.
It's
always been happening.
It's always been happening, but now it's got these like interesting terms. And because we never have, you don't get a summertime atmospheric river, do you?
Maybe. If it was something to watch the news for, they would name it. That's why they name it. They want to have, and of course they use the bomb cyclone.
Bomb cyclone is the most ridiculous one.
That's right. Pretty soon, eventually, it's going to get down to, you know,
nuclear Wu-Tang storm. Oh, Wu-Tang. Nuclear Wu-Tang's coming. Oh, boy.
That's right. And it's never anything like calm and serene, like a heavenly snowfall coming your way. No, it's nothing like that. It's bomb cyclone. Like terrorist snow is coming at you this weekend.
Thunder snow. Yeah.
Thunder snow. Got monster truck snow coming riding over the whole. Depending on what media they're on, they just name it something different.
Sky avalanche. Whoa, a sky avalanche? Sky avalanche.
That's a good one. Sky avalanche.
I like it.
We're like, speaking, oh my God, we got to get out of the way.
Off topic, sky avalanche. Talk about avalanches here. If you haven't seen that Buried documentary on Netflix about the avalanche in 1982 at Alpine Meadows, check that out. That is a fascinating, terrible, dark, interesting story.
What's the name of it again? Just Buried, right?
Buried is what it's called, yeah. I think it came out last year, but it just went on Netflix recently. And it's a fascinating story. It's amazing how much things have changed, how much more information we have. And how they actually pioneered a lot of that stuff back at Alpine Meadow back in the 70s and 80s. And I will tell you, if I could go back in time and be a ski bum at any time, it seems like the late 70s out in Lake Tahoe was the best time to do it.
That was Hot Tub Time Machine time.
It was better than Hot Tub Time Machine. Yeah.
Yeah. Great work, Buffalo.
You know, it's difficult. Change is difficult, but what Ski the Whites has just done is they have just changed now into the White Mountain Ski Company.
Nice.
So in 2016, this is from Andrew Drummond, when he started Ski the Whites, he said, "Didn't know if we would succeed or fail, just that I wanted to spend as much free time in the White Mountains as possible. With every incremental decision and all of the countless hours that friends and family and community have donated, I couldn't be more appreciative and thankful of where we are today. Short story is that I'm changing our name due to a trademark conflict with Ski the East."
Wow. They made
I have to acknowledge my incredible coworkers are moving forward with our new name, White Mountain Ski Company, which will carry us through the next chapter of our business. We want to make it clear that while we thought we could coexist with Ski the East, this was purely a business issue, and we do not harbor ill will towards the owners of their brand or their brand. Sorry. This wasn't the path we planned. This wasn't the path we planned, but it's an opportunity to move forward and continue serving our community as experts in our region, our categories, and provide the best possible service. We look forward to sharing the 23-24 season with you. Thanks for bearing with us as we make this transition. Now, it seems like wherever Ski the Whites is, or now the White Mountain Ski Company, they've always had some drama with this, with the whole issue with Black Mountain and them shutting down the mountain and pulling their uphill program. It's just been a lot of controversy and a lot of obstacles, but it's cool seeing Andrew and his people just finding a way to become successful, kind of pushing through any of these challenges and finding a way to become successful. So congrats to them, and good luck with the new name and brand. I mean, it sounds pretty cool. White Mountain Ski Company. I don't know. Ski the Whites. It was okay. I think this one actually sounds a little better.
Yeah. I like it better.
Yeah.
The other one had a borderline of like racism or something. I don't know. Somebody would bitch about it. You know, it was eventually.
I'm sure someone did.
Somebody's going to bitch about it. So yeah. This is more, it's classic, more classic name, I think.
But now I feel like they got to start making skis. Right?
Yeah.
Like White Mountain Ski Company, like you got to start making skis.
I like it. I like the idea.
Could be part of their plan. Who knows?
That could be the Ski Bum Podcast could collaborate. That will be our foil ski adventure.
White Mountain Ski Bum Podcast Company.
Boom.
All right.
Boom.
I love it. Well, again, congrats to Andrew and the team, and best of luck. And yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it sounds good. And I hope they have an awesome season up there in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire.
That's awesome.
And that wraps up the old ski news. And now on to our main topic. And I teased this earlier. I had a wonderful chat with David Abramowitz, who is the founder and CEO of Coolkia. And for those who don't know, and if you're a skier or snowboarder who travels, you've definitely heard of Coolkia. They make really, really high-end boot bags, ski bags, snowboard bags, and just travel gear, backpacks, well, et cetera.
Yeah, they make other bags. Like I've seen Coolkia non-ski stuff like out, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I have their mountain biking bag and backpack, which, you know, what's cool about their company is that you can tell, and David talks about this in the interview, is that the people who create the products are people who use the products.
Yeah,
you know, he's a skier. Nice. He's been a skier for a long time. His family skis. And you can tell when you use their products that a skier used this or a skier made this because of there's a lot of thought and clever design that goes into making their products.
And I got to say, like, I missed this interview because I couldn't get out of some other commitment. So I was pretty pissed off. But when we met David up at Snowbound and we're talking to him, love hearing the interview, and I hope everybody enjoys it.
We think you'll dig it. So here he is, Mr. David Abramowitz. We have a very special guest this week. We were fortunate enough to meet up and chat at the Snowbound Expo up in Boston, and he was kind enough to take some time to chat with us, Mr. David Abramowitz, CEO, founder of Coolkia. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you for having me here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was cool. So when we I kind of ran into your booth there at Snowbound, and I just started chatting with you and kind of making comments about the little design niceties and thoughtful enhancements that you put onto your products, which is kind of one of the things that to me makes your product stand out from the pack. So it was cool, the conversation that we had. I was losing my voice that day. I don't know if you remember that. I was trying to scream and I had no voice, and I was like, let's do a podcast. It'd be great to kind of hear more about the Coolkia story. So
for those who don't. Yeah, I had no voice either.
Yeah. It was a rough one. I don't know, timing wise, right after Halloween, or I don't know, weather was changing. A lot of people were screaming that weekend too. So
yeah.
So for those who don't know, what is Coolkia and what products do you offer?
Coolkia, we are a leading developer of premium adventure gear bags, and what that really means for the snow sports industry is we make ski boot bags, snowboard boot bags, ski and board bags, and travel collection products for the adventurer. You know, if you're someone who's going to ski or snowboard and you're going to go out west or you're going to go overseas, we supply those products for you. And there's a whole host of more of what we do. We have cycling and, you know, more of general travel. But for the market here, you know, being the Ski Bum podcast, that's really what our focus is. And premium is really key to what we do.
Actually, I would show, but I don't want to mess up my camera. I have your mountain bike bag right over here, and I have one of your ski backpacks right over here.
So, oh, I love that. I love
so,
that.
Yeah, I've noticed just when I was always looking for, you know, always looking for bags, always looking for, you know, upgrading stuff. And there was always something about your brand that made it something a little bit different, a little more thoughtful, a little better designed. So one thing I wanted to ask you about, what were you doing before you started this company?
So this had nothing to do with what I do now. I was, for 15 years, I was a corporate in-house attorney in the tech industry, and I was running a department, and I just decided it was time for a change. Life is too short, and I wanted to do something different, and I'm an avid skier, hiker, world traveler, cyclist, outdoor person, and being in an office, you know, for the rest of my life wasn't what I wanted to do. So yeah, I jumped and took that leap.
That's a bold move. Cause that's probably like a nice, not I don't know if cushy is the right word, but you're probably making pretty good bank. I can afford to go on my trips whenever I want to, or whenever, you know, your allocation of vacation is available. Right.
I would advise, if my kids wanted to do what I did, I would tell them never to do what I did. It was a big, big risk, but you know, I'm entrepreneurial and creative and innovative at heart. And it always, you know, when I was a young guy in college, I ran a painting company to put myself through in the summers and in between, you know, so, you know, running my own business was always there. And I was always someone who looked at products and, you know, I kind of have an engineering mindset, I think, a bit too, which is, hey, look, they should be done this way. They're not working correctly. So that, you know, those two tugs were always there. And, you know, I, you know, that combined with my, you know, I said traveling and being an outdoor person really just kind of all came together.
Yeah. And was there a specific moment or incident somewhere that just triggered you and said, you know what? I'm done. I'm starting this company. Let's go.
Yeah, I was up in Vermont skiing a weekend with some old friends of mine. I went to college up at UVM, you know, long, long ago, you know, decades ago. But we were up there skiing and just getting onto the lift, you know, all the way was a real chore, you know, getting from the house to, you know, to the car to where we're staying. I can't recall where we stayed, and then getting to, you know, to the lodge. And it was a lot of work. And then, you know, people forgetting things and, you know, products ripping or breaking. It was a lot. I work with it. You know, I was in the telecom industry at the time. I work with engineers and designers and developers on a daily basis. And we're always talking about how products should be designed and developed and improved. And, you know, I'm on the lift with, you know, just getting there going, oh, what a pain. And it just dawned on me, I go, I could do better, you know, that what was out there, you know. And I went back after that weekend and I just started like kind of speccing out like we would, you know, tech products, and started kind of noodling and drawing. And, you know, I can't draw for the life of me. I'm creative, but I can't draw. And then I said, yeah, I think I kind of hit upon something, you know, and that was it.
So you started making the sketches and had the ideas. And I guess what, being from, you know, in, you know, an attorney, you need to be very detail oriented in terms of, you know, making sure everything is addressed and covered. And that probably, like I said, engineering mindset, that all sort of translated and kind of set you up in a way that this made sense.
It did. You know, be my background, certainly what I did, you know, because I was in-house, I wasn't in a firm. I was in-house working with the business people and directly with engineers and software designers and marketing, business and operational people on a daily basis. That's what I did. And, you know, and that was my favorite part of it, you know, and I'd whisper the business in the business people's ears and very tied into the business. And it all sort of just came together. You know, I really knew how to spec out a product, you know, think it through and kind of put together, you know, a wants and needs sort of list of specs and kind of walk it through and kind of, you know, kind of tease it out until I really kind of came up with what I thought was a significantly superior product.
So were you still working at that job when you started speccing this out?
I was. And, you know, I already knew that I wanted to start a business. I just didn't know what it was going to be. And I'd had some offers to, you know, to become a, you know, a head attorney in a biotech firm in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And then, you know, I'd also had some offers to jump on some startups. And then this sort of came around at the same time. And I said, no, I'm going a completely different direction. And business is business. And it doesn't have to be high tech. And, you know, a widget's a widget. And, you know, and so it's kind of all the same.
So how long from that time when you first started speccing it out to quitting your job and having a like a working prototype?
The working pro. So it took me. So I incorporated the company in 2009. So a good way to answer it. We entered the market in the fall of 2012. We so actually the show that preceded Snowbound years ago was called the Ski and Snowboard Expo, the Boston Ski and Snowboard Expo. That's where we debuted in the fall of 2012, our first products. And we had two products at the time. One was called the Ski Trekker and then the Boot Trekker. And we showed them and we had, you know, all of one color for each, you know, black and black. And that was it. So, that was the beginning. So it took us 3 years really from concept to market is really what it was.
Okay. And that's probably an interesting time too, you know, 2009 kind of financial crisis sort of playing itself out a little bit after that. And
how long,
so did you quit your job in 2009 when you started?
Going back always, I did quit it around that time. And I was obviously doing other things on the side while I was working on this, you know, my wife and I, we had young kids at the time. So, I was doing a lot of things and then I was kind of pulling this together all at the same time, trying to figure out, you know, how to really bring, you know, this soft goods product, you know, to reality, you know, both in one, you know, one, a working prototype and then how to actually get it manufactured. And then how to actually get it here into the United States. You know, I did try and get it manufactured on a production level in the US naively. I was driving up in factories in Maine. I was out in Colorado. I was out west in other parts in the Midwest. And ultimately, the answer came back. All those factories, like, yeah, we can make it, but we're gonna sub it out to
$400.
yeah. But they go, the reality is, they go, look, you know, you need to do this in Asia. We'll subcontract it out to a factory in Asia. I'm like, whoa. Well, why am I trying to do it here through you?
Why do I need you? Yeah.
So ultimately, you know, long story short is I had to go overseas and then, and I did work through some middlemen in the beginning and I realized that was not the best way to go. And nothing works well. Ultimately we found a good factory and went direct ourselves.
Okay. So can you walk us through the process? So 2009, you start sketching it out.
Yeah.
How does the process of finding the materials, like, do you work with an industrial engineer in terms of how to kind of 3D model the product, what it's going to look like? How does that process go from sketch to actually having a prototype in your hand?
Yeah. So I'll back it up a little bit. It really goes from, like, you know, from the first thing is, you know, identifying a need, you know, and I identified a need. I looked, you know, for storing and carrying, you know, ski gear. And, you know, like a boot bag and, you know, and then I kind of came up with like, as I said, the tech sheet of what, you know, what this really needs in it, you know, in my mind is like, hey, it needs pockets for gloves. It needs a helmet sling. It needs boot pockets on the side that are shaped like ski boots rather than just a flat panel, because I don't want to take the central compartment and suck up all that room, you know, so because ski boots are, you know, oddly shaped. They protrude on the, you know, outer side of your foot. So all these little different things we did. So I identified all the specs and then I went from there. We researched and the market and everything. And from the next stage, you know, I did some mock-ups. Then we went to a design and I had to find an industrial designer, you know, really, which itself was a chore of a process, finding the right designer. You know, there are plenty of designers, you know, one guy he said, you know, I design car parts. One guy, you know, said, I design, like, you know, hard bike frames. You know, one is that, you know, at the end of the day, I needed a soft goods design, industrial designer, and not just in a soft goods industrial designer, but someone who could make a significant weight bearing product, you know, that would be, you know, ergonomic for the body and stuff. So I've been through several designers in the past. Currently with the last one for 8 years, he's incredible. And the other two before him were incredible as well in their own way. But then what I present to the designer is, hey, look, I have this idea. I have these specifications. And then we go through what they call the ideation phase. And the ideation phase, whereas they take my concept and my idea and what I've told them about, and they throw a number of solutions. Hey, Dave, you think it should be this way, but how about if we try it this way or this way or this way? And they give me like 4 or 5 different solutions. That's what a designer does.
Okay.
I then choose a solution, and together we sort of tease that together and build out what the real solution should be. You know, in the beginning, my mindset was, well, they're the experts, they're not going to always know. And then with time, I learned, hey, wait a second. No, I'm really the person who's passionate about this and driving it and knows the need. So I learned to interject myself into that process more. So we go through that. And then ultimately, we will first usually make a simple mock-up, sometimes from paper, sometimes some supplies, sometimes stitching things. And then the next thing you do is you actually go to a prototyping phase, which is typically 3 levels of prototype. I've heard from prototypers and factories that I work with, you know, the larger companies do many versions because they just throw it over. You know, I'm very conscious of their time.
You've got more resources and ability to do that.
Yeah, too, right? I'm very conscious. And, we usually do it in 3. The first one usually comes back and you're like, oh, you know, not what I really expected, but, you know, I've learned to accept that, you know, and then, you know, then you mold it and the second one starts getting it really close. And the third one is usually we've nailed it 99%. So that's really, and then you go from there, you typically go to mass production or production level, and the factory will then make you another production level sample. And if you have any last minute changes you need or things that need to be picked up on, you can throw them in there because we do a lot of testing all throughout the phases, and there's always something more that pops in. And also you want to make sure that the people who will be on a mass level, production level, will be making it just like the sample you want, and that's the one that they're going to produce. And then you go to, you know, then you go to the factory production level, and that's, and it kicks out. So that's very, very high level and simplified of a long and challenging process, but that's really what it goes through.
Okay. And did you expect, like when this all started and you started creating these prototypes, did this process take significantly longer than you thought it would? Or did, based on the people you spoke to when you started this business, did this kind of fall in line with your expectations?
Well, so I think I was smart enough, I'm not going to give myself a pat on the back, to think it would be 10 times harder than I envisioned.
Oh, wow.
But it was 100 times harder than I envisioned. Mm-hmm. So because, you know, now I understand the process, I have the experience, and I have all the resources that, you know, I know how to do it. And that's really what experience is. It's almost kind of, you know, Stephen Wright's joke, experience is what you wish you knew yesterday. You know, and you know, like, you know, and that's what it is. I had to build up, you know, I had to find the right designers. I had to find the right factories. I had to find the right materials. I had to learn about materials. I had to learn about all the little pieces and parts. And I had to learn about where these kinds of things could fail at different points. So I now know those, and we learned along the way. And that's why we do a lot of what we do, is because one of the things that's real important to us is not just our high quality technical designs and really thoughtful and smart designs and features, like the things you picked up when you walk by our booth at the show, but it's the quality, because I want to make a product that is, you know, a premium level. It's not going to fail. And, you know, we do, and I've learned, you know, there are, to find all the stress points, you know, where can things go wrong? And we beat these things up and we test them and we double and triple reinforce things. For example, like bar tacking, you know, some brands won't bar tack points because it's, you know, more expensive, you know, some will bar tack, you know, in those places I double, if not triple bar tack, you know, and it's overkill. But when you're paying up for a product, you know, and you're going to be using it and you're traveling or you're out in the elements and it fails on you, you're not very happy. So I spend that little bit extra to do that. That's what we do. So I know it's a long-winded answer. I kind of went up on a tangent, but There's a lot to learn. Soft goods products that are handmade, these are handmade. There's a lot that could go wrong. And I didn't appreciate that. I was like, oh, we'll just design a bag and we'll make it and we'll move on. You know,
yeah.
There's so much more.
Don't they say too, like with entrepreneurs, like if they actually knew everything that they were going to encounter, that most of them would just stay with their current job or wouldn't venture out and deal with that, because again, there's so many unknowns. And
there really is. And it is a risk. You know, I do a lot of, or done, and I still do a lot of talks at schools and entrepreneurial programs. And I do, you know, tell people, look, I'm here. We the brand has survived. But you know, and I know the drive of being an entrepreneur and an innovator and wanting to improve stuff. But I tell people, I go, really, really look at where you are in your life, your stage, your responsibilities, because I'm not a good example of, hey, look, he did it, because, you know, 99 are going to fail, you know, and it's, there was a lot of hard work and a lot of luck involved, you know, it's kind of, they have to line up. And it's so, just because I made it doesn't mean it's easy to do. It was brutal and I'm glad we made it. But if I'd known then what I know now, getting back to your point, I probably wouldn't have done it. You know, yeah. I would have somehow found another outlet for my creative, you know, but you know, in hindsight, now I'm here and my children have witnessed it from day one. And I employ people who are really happy at the job they do. We really are proud of what we make, and I've been able to create the work environment. We have a great, I hate the word, the cliche team, but we do, and everyone gets along well, and no one dreads working. You know, we're really very collaborative and it gets along really, really well. And there's no screaming and yelling at each other and politics. It's a good environment. So I'm really proud of the product and what we've been able to make for the people who work for us, that they're really proud of what they do and they would be able to use their creative juices in their own ways.
Yeah. That's an ideal work scenario, obviously. And how big is your team?
We have the hard team is around 9 people. But then we also have, eight groups of independent sales reps throughout the country, which brings in around another 14, 15, 16 people. And then, you know, our factory is, you know, we don't in-house manufacture. So our factory is over in Vietnam, and that was a conscious decision. You know, there have several hundred people there and it's an incredible factory. It's, and I'm going to go up here because I'm very proud of it. It's socially responsible and what that really means, because, you know, I've been over Asia countless times. And what I can say is that there is no slave labor, forced labor or child labor in this factory. It's brand new. Conditions. They work Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 4:30. Holidays, paid by direct deposit, like we do, which was very new to them. Probably none of the workers had bank accounts when they started. So it's really a model of how things should be done. So they're an extension of us, and we used to warehouse on our own. It started in my garage, as they say, and then my garage and cellar, and then we got a warehouse and a bigger warehouse and a bigger warehouse, and then we went to a fulfillment center and then a bigger one, and now we've actually gone down to a medium-sized one because I like the more personal connection. You know, that's kind of what we do. So it's a we're a very modern brand, you know, lean team with a lot of partners out there.
Yeah, and it's you mentioned Vietnam, and that was interesting because I've, you know, had a couple different, not actually skiing stuff, some quote unquote high end workout stuff. And it's all been made in Vietnam. So it seems like that's a lot of social conscious, maybe that's the term you've said. Those kind of companies seem to be aiming at Vietnam now for manufacturing, which is interesting.
I switched us to Vietnam before most were switching. And that this is where my background is being a corporate in-house attorney came to play. You know, half my work was international. I dealt with Asia a lot too. And I had, you know, where to choose. And I looked at the landscape and I said, you know, Vietnam is going to bring me things that I'm not going to get in other countries. And the partners I can work at there are going to get the quality of what I want. And that's really what I found there. And, you know, and others for various reasons, you know, political or what have you, you know, and just, you know, the pandemic and everything have really the gates have flooded over there since, mm-hmm. But, you know, I went there for the very good business landscape and for the quality we could get and good partners. And I can say this, you know, I've been there a lot of times and, you know, it's the factory is Korean owned and it's I'm really proud of who we work with. And I'll say this, I mean this about the Vietnamese people. They're wonderful people. I mean, my gosh, you know, and they're just such wonderful family oriented, hardworking people. And it just, I love going there and meeting them. And it's a wonderful country to visit. I'm a world traveler and I have been there so many times. I love it.
Yeah. You and Anthony Bourdain, I remember like how many shows he did about going to Vietnam and how he
was his favorite place to go. Yeah. And I know exactly why. Someone who likes to travel, you get it. It's really a diverse and cool country made up of really wonderful people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and it's incredible just to think of what they've gone through over, you know, the war and everything, the 60s and 70s. And imagine someone told you as a kid, you're going to start a company one day, Dave, and you're going to have a factory in Vietnam making high-end ski and outerwear.
I never would have, because, you know, right? I remember that as a kid. You know, I was a young kid at the time the war was going on, and, you know, but it's interesting. I you know, so it was strange to me going there. I'm like, how am I going to be received? And it was right away, when I went there, it was still kind of early for Americans to be going there. And when I came back and told people here, they were like, you went where? And I told them, and then when I went to Vietnam, I didn't know how to be received. They were really curious and they're open arms to me and polite. And someone said something, someone made something very profound to me and explained it to me in a bigger understanding. They said, you know, they said, Dave, our population is very young. That was our grandfather's war, because it is a very, very young country age-wise. And they said, by the way, you're not so special in the war front with us. You know, we've been invaded by the French, by the Americans, the Japanese, and the Chinese, and the Chinese after you in 1980. So we're just used to it. So you were just one of many, and we don't harbor ill will towards you. This is what the people told me, you know, that's on a person-to-person level. Yeah. And that's how I look at it.
But that's, yeah. I mean, for a young population to have that sort of mature mentality towards it is actually extremely impressive. Because you think about how many people just, you know, whatever was implanted in them or genetically, they just, oh, you know, we're French, we hate the English. You know, like there's just a lot of that just ingrained in people over time. But to have that sort of openness and, you know, I guess intelligence, I mean, it's extremely profound.
It is, you know, and I've felt nothing is confirmed. I've been there many times, nothing but just, you know, opening arms and just people to people. And they're moving forward, not backwards. Yeah. They're not harboring the past, they're moving forward.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And back to your product though.
Yes.
So for that Boston Ski and Snowboard Show back in 2012.
Yes.
How did the prototype that actually, was it a prototype or was it already pretty much mass produced at that point?
It was produced. So the way I look at it, we made 500 the first year, you know, and now we make a lot more. But yeah, it was mass produced And I called up the people who ran the show, because back then, you know, we called people too. And they said, hey, look, yeah, you can sell at the show because you're not in the market yet in any retailer. So you can sell directly at the show and see how you do. And we sold them like crazy. And what I kept hearing is, you guys made like the iPhone of boot bags. They go, this is like the over-engineered boot bag. And I'm like, they go, you must be a skier. That's what we kept hearing. And we sold tons of them. So it, you know, it told us that we really were onto something. It was very helpful.
Yeah. That must have been a huge, like just weight off your shoulders, or just a huge sigh of relief, I guess, because of all that, you know, 3 years of hard work and getting to that point and being like, okay, let's see if the market is going to react to what I'm providing.
Yeah, it was. It was very, you know, it was really just, you know, putting a stamp on it. And it was rewarding is all I can say. It was really rewarding to just see these things flying out of the booth. And we had to keep bringing it. Every night we had to bring in more. We're like, we couldn't believe it. So the need that I had identified up in Vermont skiing with friends that time really was there. And, you know, people tell me, oh yeah, my bag ripped, or, oh my God, I can't fit my helmet in it, you know, because of the way the strange shape this thing is, or my God, or I forgot something because it was, you know, I thought it was on the bottom, or, you know, all the things that we were solving with our products, they were telling us about. And it was really, and, you know, one of the things I do when we make products, I listen. And, you know, I'm out there still skiing, and we have snowboarders, and we're out there traveling. We're still doing all the things, looking and searching for those needs and constantly improving our products. But we listen. So I do these consumer shows because I want to hear people. And they tell me all the time, hey, Dave, this is great, but I would do this next time. Oh, you should make this product, you know, and, you know, you should look at this. And we listen and absorb. And then we also, you know, talk to our specialty shop partners, because we're a real specialty brand. You know, we don't sell to discounters. And we go and, you know, we talk to the stores, you know, the experts. And, you know, we're not in the stores that are just pumping the stuff out, not caring. We're in the stores that really care. And so we listen to everyone, you know, from, you know, we don't just go to one of the things I had as a concept, and I know I've kind of gone off on a tangent here, but, you know, you got the passionate, you know, founder. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, when I looked at things in the market back in 2009, there was either things were just directed one way, real cheap stuff, uninformed stuff. I didn't think like skiers or snowboarders really made the stuff, or stuff that was made just for the experts. I was like, well, what about the 95% of the recreational skiers of various levels? You know, they need a solution that's going to work for them. And so that's what we did, and that's what we still do. We're not just making stuff for, we're not making throwaway, uninformed product, or making stuff just for the expert racers, you know what I mean, doing the Olympics. We're making stuff for people who are really out there because they like to adventure. It's their weekend, it's their hobby, it's their passion, it's what they do. We're making things for all different levels of people who are really out there, the 95%. And we make stuff with the others too, you know, the experts up top. I don't make any, we don't make any of the throwaway uninformed stuff. That we won't do, even though people say, come on, make a cheap bag. You know, no, that's not.
Plenty of other companies make that.
It's not what we do. You know, we make the stuff that as I like to say, you get what you pay for. And it's like, you know, lifetime products. That's what we make.
Yeah, I know a lot of folks, you know, I understand the whole, like, I want the cheap product. But again, do you want to buy the same product every 3 years? Or right. Do you want to buy the product, like you said, it's going to last you 10 years, a lifetime?
That's
fair. I've always been a guy who's wanted the higher end thing that's going to last me a long time. You know, I want the car, it's going to last me 10 years. I want the boot bag, it's going to last me 10 years. I do understand the point of view, because I've also been the guy who's wanted the cheap solution, but I've learned over time, again, one of the things, you know, talking about, you know, experience, yeah. You learn that over time, the cheap stuff, you do get to what you pay for. You
know, my background is, you know, as a, you know, running a painting company, putting myself through school, you know, college and law school. You know, I learned if I bought the cheap tools, I was going to pay, and time is money. Mm-hmm. When I was an attorney, time is money. And, you know, so just from that pure thought that just, you know, things breaking on you or having to go and return stuff, this and that, it's just a waste of time. So I've always been a person to buy, you know, buy quality, and that's what we make. And I'm a firm believer in it. And, you know, and that's what we do with our products. Like I said, they're better designed, you know, to fit more smartly, and they're featured. So you go, Oh, a skier made this, or a snowboarder made this. They get it. Oh my God. Sometimes people are like, I didn't even know this was here. When it was there, I was like, so surprised. That's what we do.
Yeah. And you mentioned that those products, and specifically at the show, you had the new single wheeled ski bag, single pair. Like that's a phenomenal product. Cause usually it's the giant double one. It's like, that's great. But you know, what if I'm just going on a trip, but I also want to wheel my single pair of skis with me?
Yeah. And so being what we are in the market, the ones looking for the needs and thinking and actually being out there, we're not just guys sitting at desks, you know, I travel is, you know, before this all started, you know, when I spoke earlier, I ski travel a lot, and, you know, I've done out west a lot. And I, for the last, I don't know, 9 years, I've been doing a lot of European ski travel, and I know what's needed for those travels. And we've made a travel collection to address just that. And we're the ones who are leading, you know, with our development, our products. You know, we have several patents out there. And But one of the things, and others jump on and they copy us. And the old saying, you should feel it's you know,
serious form of flattery, right?
Yeah, I don't take it as that. I'm like, I just find it as like, it's just something I don't do, just the way I do. But the single roller it's such a, to me, the smartest thing going.
It's a no-brainer.
Everyone, so if you look back at ski travel, if you go back 15 years, bless you, the ones who were ski traveling were hardcore skiers only for the most part. And they're like, I get two pair of skis or three pairs of skis, give me that big bag. Those double bags, which we make, and we make the most bomb-proof one you could have, they serve a purpose. Family's going like, dad's going to take it all. I'm going to put it all in one, throw the kids' skis there. They're there. Or if you're a racer or someone who has two, three pairs of skis too. But with the Icon and Epic passes, your regular person is hopping on a plane. They're taking their own pair of skis. They don't want to haul a huge, heavy bag. They want to be versatile. They want it to be able to, customize to the size of their skis, which might be shorter these days, and probably are. So we came up with this single roller. It's a size adjustable from 155 up to 190, maybe even can get to 195, and it has a roll top adjustment you do once. You can adjust where you want the handle to be. And it's super lightweight. But it's built with all the durability that we put into our double roller. And the double roller, like I said, does serve a purpose. And we sell a lot of those. But for me, I'm looking at, if you're a couple that, only yourselves, why don't you each just have one of those instead of one of you suffering, Or if you're just a single person, or if you're an empty nester, why would you call these big bags? It's a lot easier, it seems. So I'm sure down the line, others will be copying us, but it won't be as good quality wise, but it is what it is.
And again, I saw it in person. And if you haven't checked it out yet, please go see it in person, touch it, grab it, feel it. It is, you can tell it's a premium piece. I've got plenty of cheap ski bags and they serve a purpose, but I bought one on Amazon a couple years ago for my wife and we used it one trip and it's already ripping.
Yeah. So that's what we do. One of the things I'm proud to say about like our rollers, I said, we test. So on a double roller, when we were building that one out, one of the things that I was most concerned about, because I already knew from the history of our other products, how to deal with stress points and stuff, double and triple bar tacking, how to pick the fabrics, which is something you talked about before, how to get the good fabric, and because what you might think is a good heavy fabric, what regular consumers might think isn't really it. There's more to it. So I know how to pick those ones, but I didn't know about the wheel systems, the chassis to the set, the kind of bag. So we went and looked at test reports, but then we did our own testing and, we were looking at, you've probably seen some of the wheel bags with like real pretty aluminum shiny looking or steel looking shiny wheels on the sides. They look great,
Yeah.
Well, we drop tested those and they didn't survive the greatest. But when we did our drop test, we did something else. We didn't just drop them straight down because no one's going to perfectly drop every time. Luckily, we dropped them at angles on the wheels. And those wheels broke very quickly. So they look great. Now, if you're out west or in Europe, or in Asia, Japan skiing, and that wheel break, you're a miserable person. So what we did is we found the best wheels possible with all the drop tests, and we put them on our bag. It wasn't the shiny ones on the outside. It was the ones inside, rugged. And we drop tested, and they did great. And we actually picked the ones that aren't put in with rivets. If you look at the cheaper bags, they have rivets in them. And ours are with four screws for each wheel. If you ever break a wheel, we would just send you a replacement in there and you're off and rolling again.
So is that more like
never had to send one out though. Never in all the years. I have a dozen sets of spare wheel systems sitting ready to go. Never had to, but we could. Your bag is not destroyed just because the wheel goes.
So that almost be more like a rollerblade chassis then, right? So you could replace that with a bolt and
that's the whole point. Yeah. You can get, so there are lots of ways to look at products. I say even the fabrics, what people think are like the best durable fabric. It's like, no, that's what they call, that might be what we call in the industry, cheap pack cloth. It looks strong and rugged, but it's cheap and it's heavier. Mm-hmm. And heavy is not better. We use a lot of lighter weight fabrics, which are technical fabrics, more expensive. They're stronger and more durable than those heavy pack cloths. So heavier isn't necessarily better.
Yeah, that's That you kind of just the conversation we had kind of answered questions, but also had me think of some new questions because you talked about how, you know, meeting with people at the shows, and I saw you chatting with tons of people and people come up to you. I mean, you can tell you're the CEO, you're the founder, but you are passionate about these products and you're happy to talk to anybody about them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just describing what we talked about just now with the wheels, like just that's a huge selling point. The thickness of the material. Those are huge selling points. How has this job and being in the industry now, does it change the way you look at skiing and vice versa? Because it all started from you being a skier and looking for a different product. Has it kind of changed the way you look at the industry, skiing industry, now being in it?
Yeah, it definitely looks at, so it's, there have been two impacts. One is I get a little frustrated because of the schedule. I can't ski as much as I wanted to ski, you know, because we have shows and they take up time. So, but I make it happen, you know. Yeah. What I do is I schedule two ski trips, and my kids, when they were younger, said, and you can't work when you're on those ski trips. So I get other trips into, like, after shows. I get a day or two here or there. And I usually go to areas where we're not in Europe right now, not yet. So I go to Europe because then I'm like, I can't even like be drawn in to go see my retailers and dealers and people I know, because the kids used to hate me for that. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. But how I look at the industry, yeah, it does. What it really makes me look at, there are premium brands out there, and I really respect those. But there's also a lot of non-premium brands. How about if I use that term?
Nice way to put it, yeah.
And I think it's very hard for consumers to separate the two. And then there's all, you know, which is kind of sad to me. And those premium, non-premium brands really work off of discounting. And, you know, like, it's just always discount. And when I look at it, it's a brand like that, there's a reason it's a brand like that. They're cutting somewhere. They're either, in my opinion, using a cheaper factory, and we can, you know, you can just put your mind as to what's going on there, or they're using cheaper components, cheaper fabrics, or less than stellar workmanship. You know, our defect level is incredibly low on the workmanship, because the factory we're in is probably, I would argue, the best in the world right now. They only do premium level product. We are the only ski brand that they will take on. The factory owner and I have become such good friends over the years. And we visit together. His son actually visited and stayed with me. His son is actually going to school in the States here. Those sorts of connections you don't get when you're just going for cheapest bid. And we don't do cheapest bid. We have a long-term relationship now with this factory. We were a very good factory before, but I moved to this one because I knew it would be better and specialized. I look at it, I see product, and I go, I just wish consumers knew, you know, you can get in four, you know, even bags. It's like, for example, we co-brand with YKK, you know, the zipper company, and they're mm-hmm. the best out there. And we have their hang tags on all of our products, because they go, we want to co-brand with you because you guys make a really great product, premium level, and you use only our zippers. Others might use YKK in some places where you can see, or cheaper ones on the inside.
The hidden pockets where you're looking. Sneaky.
Another thing we do is we use corrosive resistant grommets for drainage and ventilation. So if you look at our grommets on our bags, they're not the shiny silver ones. They're coated with a baked on paint to keep them from rusting and popping up. All the little things, the bar tacking, all those little things we do, that's to make you have a product that's going to last. And the wheel systems, like I said, it's replaceable. The buckles on our products, we design our product. We use only ITW Nexus buckles because they're the best out there. And we make it as much as possible that those are replaceable. So if you break a buckle, we send you a new one. So we're trying to keep your product going as long as possible, because I'm not, in my view, we're not just selling bags. We're building a brand and have building a brand. And we want people to go, oh, I buy Kulkia. They make the best ski boot bag or snowboard bag or ski bag, you know, or snowboard bag. Oh man, I want to buy their cycle bag. I want to buy the travel bag because I know what they do is smart and the best. That's what we're doing. We're not just trying to, you know, make a product that you have to replace every 3 years. That's not what we're doing.
Yeah. No, and that's kind of why I'm in my second or third different cool kit bag, because again, I too noticed the difference. Like you, I didn't notice until you mentioned it, you know, the different zippers, the different grommets, but you do feel a difference versus other brands. Like I've got a cheap boot bag that I'm trying to pawn off on my kids, and it served its purpose, but it wasn't, nothing was thought through. You know,
like, yeah. Anyway. I mean, I was going to jump in. One more thing I didn't talk about is like the support systems that are just our regular, what I call short haulers. You know, localized skiing or just going local, but not the big long travel. We put a hiking grade support system on. I'm a hiker, you know, and when you carry 25 pounds on your back, you know, that's, if you're going for a bit, that's a lot of weight. So we've done hiking grade supports, ergonomically designed. Hiking grade, lifter straps, sternum strap, you know, adjustable. We throw on the bigger bags, we throw waist belts in there. We know some people don't like waist belts, even though I recommend you should use one that's heavier weight. They're removable or tuckable, you know, but we, and then we use like a lot of times we use extra reinforced space mesh back panels or EVA molded back. All those thoughts of what we're putting into ours that we know that the average consumer just doesn't know. So point is, that's why
they know it when they try it and they put it on.
They know when they try it. And the specialty shop brands out there, as I mentioned, we don't sell to discounters. We sell only to specialty and premium. They carry us as their high-end brand. And they say, you know, we have to carry some other stuff just because we have to, because some people only want less, you know, lesser product. But we're their premium brand. And that's who we sell to. So, you know, when you go into those real stores, you see us, you can say, hey, these guys have combed through and brought me the best. That's what we,
yeah. You know. And, you know, there's definitely a spot in the market for the cheaper brands. Cause you know, we were just talking about a podcast last week, H&M putting out this whole line of ski wear, you know, ski jackets, ski pants. Cause it's, you know, and I don't know if you know, guys are obviously friends with the Ski Talk folks. We've talked to them about it. Like, how do you get people in the industry? You know, you can't make it this super expensive, massive high level barrier to entry. So having the lower price stuff, people to get in there, disposable, there's a market for that. But again, that's not your target demographic, obviously.
Yeah.
And the folks who do start out with something cheaper. Like I've had cheap boot bags and I've had the Colchia bag now. And I'm like, it is different. And for people who care about that, it matters.
Yeah. So one thing, and I don't disagree with you whatsoever. And, you know, we could do a whole podcast you probably did on just, you know, the cost of getting into the sport and everything. And I'll say something. I won't say all of our products are expensive because they're not. We have different levels of pricing. You know, for example, we go from 89 and then up. Okay. But where we're not going to go is down to a $30, $40, $50 bag. You know, our kids' bags are less, but like we're not going to go there because to make that, there are things we'd have to do that wouldn't stand up to what a premium brand would be. So it's not just about price. Like even our low price point bag, you know, at 89, I think it is, or 79, it's still YKK zippers. It's still ITW buckles. It's just not tricked out as much. And it's a different price bag, but it's still a premium level product, just at a lesser price point. That's a difference. I don't like products, like I said, that fail, you know, or have to be thrown away. Even our $89 bag will last, if they want, it'll last 10 years, you know, just not going to be, it's not going to be the $150 bag or $160, $130, or $120 bag, you know?
Right. Yeah. And you also mentioned before about new products and improvements. So you said a lot of feedback from users. You talk to people. Are you still coming up with a lot of new ideas for products? Or is it more coming from the market?
No, it's both. Like I said, I listen to everyone and I'm out there myself, and we're still generating a lot of the things internally, but we listen. You know, the single roller was something that I came up with from going, wait a second, Icon Epic, everyone's hopping on a plane. Oh, I've gone to ski Europe and I brought my skis and I had to hop a train. You can't get a double roller ski bag on a train. You know, when you're walking down those aisles, a single roller could do it, you know? And then I'm like, oh, people, you know, women and people of like shorter people, they don't want to haul a big double roller. Their skis might be shorter, so they want something customized. So we're still, it's kind of coming from everywhere, but I do get ideas that come from the outside. You know, we make a heated boot bag, which you know is really, really big out west. And that was from our dealers out west. When I would talk to them, they said, Dave, you make the best boot bags across the board. And they said, but you need to make a heated boot bag. So I looked at that, and I, you know, a guy from the East Coast, I'm like, what? Heated boot bag? That doesn't make sense to me.
Pansies out west.
Yeah. So then I understood it, and I figured out, I said, oh, no, they're really onto something here. But what we didn't do is just go and copy what others are doing. Actually, I reached out to the company that was the first brand to make heated boot bags, and they were going through transition, and I met with the owner and said, hey, do you want to try? And I've got a great idea on how to do it differently. That I'm going to patent on this. Would you like to, you know, maybe work with me on it? And at that point, that person was looking to leave the industry. So I went with a completely different direction and made our own heated boot bag, and we patented it. And it's now the best heated boot bag on the market. So I do listen to what's coming at me, and we do it internally too.
I love that you kind of saw the market doing what it's doing with, you mentioning the Icon and Epic Pass. I mean, how many people now can just bang out a weekend trip? You know, it's like, oh, I got Jackson Hole on my pass. I'll just go shoot out there for a weekend. I don't need two pairs of skis. That's such a smart way to look at the industry and kind of keep observing and keep seeing what the market's going to need.
Yeah. And that feeds into our travel collection. You know, as I mentioned, it's not that I'm going to make products that are going to fail on you every 3 years and you have to rebuy the same product or kinds of product. I'm going to make different products. And solving another product is that Icon and Epic people and you skiing wherever you want is carry on. And, you know, so we developed a couple of long hauler products for hopping on trains, planes, and automobiles, what I call them. And you could use them for your short haul things. But if you have a short haul product already, you might go, hey, I want a long hauler. But when I design these, I design them, and it wasn't just me, others were involved. So I say, it's we. When we design these, we didn't make them just for ski. We made them so you know, for example, we have one's called a Kata and one's called a Carta. And the Kata is an all around, year round travel. Carry-on size travel backpack for that you will use for all of your travel instead of your personal carry-on bag and a roller carry-on bag. It's your one and all, and it's your organizer, and it works beautifully for when you need to go skiing with it. It carries your boots and all your apparel and everything, except for your skis and jacket, of course.
Well, you are already kind of showing me the prototype for your laptop backpack.
Yes.
Quickly.
Yeah.
And I am a massive backpack snob. Like I like to look at my straps. Do you have pockets in there? Like I'm so excited for this backpack. I know it's coming out next year.
It is. It's coming out in the fall. I'm looking at a whole row of them right here. It's absolutely, it's been in the making for 4 years, and with the pandemic, we moved things forwards, but we held some things back. And this is one of the ones that got held back. But we did this season really roll out a lot of those things that we developed during the pandemic, you know, the single roller, a snowboard bag, the Carta travel carry-on travel backpack. And then we upgraded our double roller. We upgraded our single ski bags and our other bags too. So we did this season right now is a whole bunch just rolling out, and next year more is coming too.
Yeah, I'm looking at the site right now. I'm just looking at all the different the travel products you guys sell. And again, they look very premium. And again, if you haven't gone out and actually looked at it in person and touched it, you will realize just what a premium quality product it is. And again, I love the design thinking that you're putting forth and the solutions that you're coming up with, which are, again, kind of standing out in the industry.
And I appreciate you pointed out that go look at them and see them, because one of the things, kind of getting back to your question about the industry, but I'm just saying in general, everything looks good on the web and everything looks great with the video and photography. But where we really win it is on the touch and feel. When people come and see our products in person, like, oh, this is significantly better. And that's really it. So we have the designs and the features and the smartness in it. but the quality is really something there too. And, you know, and that we don't want to be in the warranty business. That's not what we, in the return business. It's not what we do.
Yeah. And again, you being a skier, you obviously have the experience and know, you know, what you wanted and have spoken to the folks you work with and gotten the feedback to create products that obviously skiers and snowboarders want with the features that we want. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like our Kato travel backpack, which again is your year round travel backpack. It has a detachable organizer. We sell it out every year. So it's, we're onto it. And that's where we introduced the Carta, which is a lower price point version, different. It, you lose some features and stuff where someone says, I want to spend less. You now have an option. So, I'm real excited about that.
Yeah. No, they're really beautiful bags.
Thank you.
And so we're getting close to now here. So I want to ask a wrap up question. I know like collaborations are huge now in every industry. You see sneaker, like, you know, Air Jordans working with Levi's, like collaborations everywhere across industries. Is there any company, band, team that you would love to work with on a collaboration?
So, you know, I think a couple of things. One is we're already sort of, you know, as I pointed here, we're really about the travel right now. And working with travel companies is what we'd like to do. We're already doing that. We work with ADL Ski Club out of Washington State. They take people on really awesome adventures in Asia and Europe and throughout the United States. Work with Alpenlux, another travel company that's doing that as well. We want to work with more travel companies. And because, you know, I'm someone who, from the beginning, I like to adventure. I like to explore. I don't like to go, you know, just to the same hill. You know, I've done that, but I want to get out there. The more I get out there, the more I want to keep trying more. So I'd love to collaborate with more travel companies.
Like Swiss Air, Lufthansa.
Yeah, it's just, you name it. Because it's one of the things that, you know, and I'll share it here. You know it. One of the best kept secrets in skiing is skiing Europe right now. You know, a lift ticket, you know, if you get like a 7-day pass is $65 a day at the biggest mountains, you know, it's just, you know, it's, you know, when everybody's yinging, it's time to yang. And, it's, you know, you can stay in accommodations less than, you know, places. So it's, I guess my point is that's why we say we make adventure products. It's time to adventure. And, the prices are there if you just look for them and plan.
Yeah, and especially too, you mentioned Europe, the euro. Right now, it's one US dollar is 0.91 euro.
Yeah.
Which, if people sleep on Europe, because everyone wants to go out to Colorado and use their Epic Pass, but there is.
Don't get me wrong, Donut West is great, but if you're someone who, you know, lives on the East Coast and, you know, why not fly that way? You know, it's your flight might cost a little more, but your day of skiing is going to be cheaper, and your accommodations can be at the same or as or cheaper than elsewhere. And so,
I think for folks, it's a bit daunting either the language barrier or the getting from the airport to the mountain. So, what Kulkia should do is create a separate travel wing that sets up trips, European trips, just pay and we'll set up all of the transfers. That's why
we work with ADL and Alpenlux. That's what they do.
That's what they do. PC? Perfect.
That's what, so we want to work with more because I think a lot of people are just intimidated by what you're talking about. But from someone who's done it a lot, it's not that bad. Once you figure it out, you're like, oh my God, I should have done this before. Yeah. You know, they're built for it. They're, you know, mainland Europe, the Alps are, they're used to the British coming over, flying in and skiing, and the Dutch coming in and skiing. They're made for it. They've got it down. They've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. So maybe this is the year you should grab your Kulkia gear and head over to Europe.
I think it is. Or, you know, I've not done Japan to ski Japan. I should have. The pandemic stopped that because on one of my trips going over to Asia, you know, for work, I had planned on the backside skiing it, but you know, that'll have to come now.
2024.
That's right.
Year. Yeah. All right, David, it's been almost an hour. Where can people find all the information about Kulkia?
The easiest way is go to kulkia.com, K-U-L-K-E-A.com. You can look at our dealer locator to find a dealer near you. We're throughout the United States and 300 plus of the best specialty shops out there. One of the things we work on is just, I said, working only with the best dealers who are really premium players themselves and can guide you the best way.
Excellent. David Abramowitz, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Brian. I really appreciate it. And thank you very, and have a happy holiday season.
Thanks so much. Same to you.
Take care. Bye.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. If you want more information, go to skibumpodcast.com and we'll have links in the show notes. That wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out, skibumpodcast.com. We're on the socials, X, Instagram, Facebook, Untappd, YouTube, at skibumpodcast. Help us out. Become a patron. Patreon.com/skibumpodcast. If you have any emails, info you want to send us, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Stay high, stay polluting.
See ya.